we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
This is a battle of worldview.
And we activate.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for joining me on this Thursday. I'm with you Tuesdays and Thursdays. Walker's with you Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And we're just going to dive right in, man. A couple of things I missed on Tuesday, headlines that I wanted to share and just ran out of time. Man, the hour goes fast, and it's going to go fast today as well. And if you want to be a part of it and make it go even faster, the phone number is 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. And I apologize to our callers on Tuesday. I got so carried away and so excited that I never even got to the phones. I'm going to do my best today not to do that. So go ahead and call in, 888-589-8840, and I will get to the phones today. But one of the headlines that was pretty cool earlier this week, so it looks like Ron DeSantis has signed into law a constitutional carry law in Florida. To be honest with you, I didn't realize. I was thinking Florida already had it. I didn't realize that. I knew they had good gun laws. I knew I could carry there with my Texas permit, so I guess I just hadn't paid much attention to it beyond that. But what is really cool about this, not only has DeSantis hit another home run, which he seems to do every other day, but this makes the majority of states. So let this sink in, folks. 26 states now. Florida is the 26th state to allow for constitutional carry. Some call it permitless carry. And basically what it means is exactly what DeSantis said. You shouldn't have to have a permission slip from the government to exercise a constitutional right. You should be able to exercise your constitutional right with the Constitution being your permission slip. And certainly the right to keep and bear arms falls into that category. And without going too far down that rabbit hole, because you know I can talk about that for a few hours, this one absolutely is a right that you shouldn't have to have permission from the government because it's innate. It's the laws of nature and nature's God. This is a God-given natural right. I do a whole talk on this called Constitutional Defense of Your Family and Freedom, all about the natural right, the God-given right to defend, the God-given right to fight back, to protect, to preserve, to exercise exactly what Proverbs 27:12 talks about, to not be the fool that walks blindly on and suffers the consequences, but to be the wise person that foresees danger and takes precaution. Well, in today's society, today's world, the danger is that you would be mugged in the parking lot as you're going from the grocery store to your car, or that a maniac would walk into your church or to your school or to your grocery store, restaurant, whatever it is. A maniac would walk in trying to kill as many people as they can. Well, that is obviously a danger that is real in America today. Crime is out of control in America today. We removed God from the equation and we're suffering the consequences. We taught three generations now that anything goes, everything's okay. The only thing that's wrong is to get caught, to do whatever feels good, whatever you think. That creates mayhem in a culture. You remove the Bible from the culture, what do you get? You get lawlessness. You get a license for licentiousness. You get insanity. And so in that environment, you have to look around and go, what's the precaution? I have to be able to protect my family. I have to be able to stop the wolf from getting to the sheep that God has put in my care. So for me, that's my wife, my kids, my family, my grandkids, the people that attend any event that I'm speaking at. I see those as people that God's placed in my care. So I always want to be carrying. I always want to have my weapon with me that I'm trained extremely well on how to use. So I'm not just randomly saying, oh, I'm gonna get me a gun and carry it around. That's not what I'm suggesting. I'm suggesting you get trained like I've been trained. Be ready to deal with a threat if it happens. Be ready to defend the defenseless. Ready to be a terror to the terrorist. Be ready to stop the wolf at the door. And Florida now allows you to do that, to do that without a license. You don't have to ask the government for permission to carry your weapon and to protect your family. Now, I do recommend still getting the concealed carry license if you live in Florida or any other state that's passed constitutional carry, because then you can carry in other states that don't have constitutional carry but do have reciprocity. I know this is going to sound a little bit confusing. So if a state has passed constitutional carry, then you don't have to have a license. Whether you're traveling into that state or you live in that state, you can carry your weapon. Now, there's exemptions, right? They do, which I don't agree with, but they do tend to carve out places. You know, some public places, courthouses, sometimes they carve out churches, which I think is foolish, but they carve out, you know, certain places. And most states that have constitutional carry, their carve out still allows you, like, for instance, in my state of Texas, you can carry in a church as long as that church doesn't post the what we call 30-06 signs. It's not the gun, not the 30-06 gun. It's the statute. It's 30.06. And they have to post, you know, out at the front door and, you know, at the window, you cannot carry here, even if you have a license. Well, what I do is I just don't go into places like that. So I wouldn't attend a church that does that. I wouldn't, if I go to a restaurant and they've got a 30-06 sign, they're not getting my money. I'm not going to spend money. I'm not going to disarm and put my family at risk. I'm not going to go put my gun in the car and then come sit down and have dinner so that some maniac can walk in there and then I'm wishing my gun that's in the car was on my hip so that I could stop the maniac from killing my wife and kids or killing other people in that restaurant. I mean, that's exactly the scenario that created the passion in my friend Susanna Hupp. She's known as the pistol packing mama. She got elected to the legislature here in Texas 2 years before I did. And prior to that, she was the one that lobbied hard to get concealed carry passed in Texas back in 1994 or 96. I can't remember. But it was because of what happened to her. Because in Texas, of all places, folks, you think Texas is, you know, the Wild West or is super conservative. Listen, in Texas, prior to Susanna Hupp and George W. Bush signing the law, but prior to her pushing for it, you could not carry in Texas. And so here she is up in a restaurant with her parents. And a maniac drives a truck through the wall of this restaurant and gets out of the truck and starts killing people. And she's got her gun in her truck, and she's a sharpshooter. She could have easily taken this guy out. But she had to sit there and watch her parents get murdered right in front of her eyes and could not get to her truck and get to her purse and get her gun and stop this guy. And so she became a champion for allowing law-abiding citizens to carry their weapons so that in a situation like that, she could take out the bad guy. And, of course, as I talked about on Tuesday, that is exactly what's happened in places that allow concealed carry. We're able to stop the wolf before they can take out the sheep. And it's always the number one factor in how many people get murdered in a mass murder situation, how many innocents lose their lives. The number one factor, I'll say it again and again and again, is proximity. The proximity of a trained good guy or gal with a gun and the firepower necessary to stop the threat. So if the proximity is close, if there's somebody within, you know, 50 feet, 50 yards that is trained, you can potentially prevent any innocent people from losing their lives, which is what happened in West Virginia the day after Uvalde when that sheepdog with a ponytail takes out her gun and stops the threat. This guy was going to kill 40 people, and she stopped him, and he wasn't able to kill anybody. In Indiana, in the mall there, Elisha Cuthbert, or however he says his name, you know, was within about 40 yards of the wolf when he came out of that bathroom and started shooting. And within 15 seconds, Elisha engaged the threat and stopped the threat. Three people lost their lives, but hundreds potentially could have if it hadn't been for him engaging. So it's always proximity, which is why it is so important to pass laws like this so that more and more sheepdogs can get trained and carry, and be prepared to defend their family. So thank you, Ron DeSantis, for signing that law. Thank you to the legislators that passed it there in Florida, and thank you to the other 25 states. So now we're at 26 states that have permitless carry, constitutional carry. It should be all 50, folks. It should be all 50. It should be national reciprocity at a minimum should be passed, so that even if your state is foolish enough to disarm you, to allow for more and more murder, like what happened at that Nashville school, even if your state violates your constitutional rights by disarming you, that there should be a national law passed called National Reciprocity, where if I travel into your state and your state has been foolish enough to elect legislators and a governor that are for mass murder, let that sink in for a minute, because if they don't allow constitutional carry, if they don't allow trained people to carry, they are for mass murder. I don't care. There's no other way to say it. They're going to have speeches saying they're against mass murder, and that mass murder is all because of gun violence. The gun violence is the problem. They always blame it on gun violence. That's what they're going to say, But what they actually mean is we're for mass murder because we don't want to arm the law-abiding citizens that can stop it. Oh, we want armed guards around us. You know, the politicians, the movie stars, the country music artists that now are calling for an end to gun violence. You know, all of these useless idiots. I'm sorry, that's an actual phrase of art. That's a term of art. Okay, people, I'm sorry. That goes back to the whole communist thing. That's a term of art. I'm not just using an insulting term. It's a term of art. It means they're being used foolishly in order to perpetrate a Marxist cause, which is chaos in the streets. And so any politician, movie star like Matthew McConaughey that was a useful idiot for Joe Biden that went to the White House after Uvalde and spouted all the same foolish rhetoric, or a country music artist that got up the other day at the CMT Awards in the middle, you know, as part of a drag queen, you know, show and used the same terminology about how many lives have to be lost until we stop the gun violence. And their answer is take guns away from law-abiding citizens. Now, anybody with any logic knows that's foolish. That's idiotic. But that's their answer. They want more mass murder if that's their answer. They may not even realize they want, but that's what they're calling. They're going to allow for. Every gun-free zone is an invitation to the maniac to show up and kill as many people as possible. Even, you know, story after story of mass murders that drive past places that concealed carry is allowed in order to get to somewhere that's a gun-free zone so they can kill as many people as possible, because they know if concealed carry is allowed, there's someone there that's going to stop them. If concealed carry is not allowed, they can walk through the halls and kill people until the police show up. And there's no way for the police to get there in time to prevent the loss of innocent life. So even in Nashville, 15 minutes, how many lives lost? How many lives? No loss. Lives had to be lost if there had been a sheepdog on site in the building to go take out the threat, in this case where she walked around, you know, in the lobby for 3 or 4 minutes. I'm repeating too much of what I said on Tuesday. I get passionate about this. Thankfully, in Florida, we now have constitutional carry and 26 states that allow for it. But it should be all 50, and that's what we should be working towards, so that everyone, every American citizen should be allowed to defend themselves and defend their family. And I'm a big advocate for this, and I'm a big advocate for training. And so if you want to be able to defend your family, don't just go buy a gun and stick it in your pocket. Don't just go buy a gun and stick it in your truck. Get trained. And we offer the best training on the planet at Patriot Academy. It's called Constitutional Defense of Your Family and Freedom. It's 5 days. 5 days. Come spend 5 days with me on the range, getting your training during the day from the best instructors on the planet. And then in the evening, I'll train you on the constitutional history of this. And I'll give you the constitutional intellectual ammunition to defend the Constitution, defend the concept of constitutional carry, defend the concept of the natural right of self-defense. You got to learn those things, folks. So come spend 5 days with me. PatriotAcademy.com. Click on Constitutional Defense. We're going to have our first one April 23rd. So in just a couple of weeks, first course on our campus. Not the first course we've done. We've been doing this for years. We've trained 5,000 people through this course. So 5,000 sheepdogs out there now. And I'm talking men, women, kids as young as 11. We train you at 11 years old and up. And I've had as old as 91 years old go through the course. Sweet Bernice was 89. She let me know at the end of the course, I said, you're 89. She said, I'm 89 and a half. She wanted to make sure I knew about the half. Anyway, young or old, men and women. In fact, 55% of the people that go through our course are women. And most of the people that come through our course have never had any kind of training. A lot of the people that come through our course never touched a gun in their life. Many have, you know, grew up on the ranch and like I did, you know, grew up around guns, but never had any training. And I'm telling you, it will make you so confident. It will give you the skills you need, the knowledge you need to be able to defend your family. I got a couple of slots left for April 23rd, which is the day after our groundbreaking. So you could actually come in early and see John Rich and Lauren Boebert and Tim Barton and Mark Meckler and myself. We're going to have a big celebration at the campus on April 22nd. So you could be there for that and then stay over and do that constitutional defense course on April 23rd. If that's too short a notice for you, you can come some other time. We'd love to have you. All right, so check it out, patriotacademy.com. Click on Constitutional Defense. Get signed up. And if not with us, get trained with somebody. Find somebody locally that can train you. Ours is less expensive and better than anybody in the country. And I'm biased. Yes, I am. All right, got to take a quick break. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. You are listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
The borrower is the slave of the lender. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Newly published information from Lifeway Research shows 77% of self-identified Christians in dozens of states think it's a sin to lend money to someone who can't afford to pay it back. Still, few say payday loans are immoral, and one in six Christians has admitted to taking out a high-interest payday loan. The federal government's Consumer Financial Protection Bureau says a typical two-week payday loan charges the equivalent of a 400% interest rate. These sharks prey on the poor, elderly, and most vulnerable in society. Sound the alarm and make sure your family, church, and neighborhood steer clear of this vermin.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Let's be real. Retirement is expensive, and inflation is making it even harder with the cost of everything going up from pet food to a dozen eggs. Wouldn't it be great if the cost of your health care could go down? Well, MediShare 65 Plus is $99 a month for ages 65 to 74. And for many with Medicare Parts A and B, looking at other options, that's 50% or more saved per month. No gimmicks. It's $99 a month, and you can use any Medicare-approved doctor or facility, and you get 24/7 access to telehealth from the convenience of your home. Better yet, MediShare is a Christian nonprofit organization. It's a community that'll pray for you and encourage you. And since we've cut out the middleman, you get to keep the savings. Call now. You can learn more about MediShare 65 Plus. Here's the number, 833-45-BIBLE. That's 833-45-BIBLE, 833-45-BIBLE.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
I'm Corey, and this is my story. I was going through some financial troubles paying off my credit cards. I was paying high interest rates, and it just wasn't getting any better. And I knew I had to do something. So my mom told me about Trinity, and so I decided to call. Trinity was able to do something that I couldn't. I'm paying off my debt, I'm saving thousands, and things are really looking up. I promise you guys, you will not regret it when you call Trinity, because it was such a relief and less stress in my life, and it was the best thing I could have done for myself, because once I called Trinity, they took care of me, and I felt such a relief, a weight off my shoulders, and they are a Christian-based company. I love it.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
I'm Corey, and I'm debt-free for keeps.
1-800-788-1813.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. Rick Green with you, America's Constitution Coach, with you on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Walker with you Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Phone number to call today, 888-589-8840. I know I say everything way too fast. Let me say that again, 888-589-8840. That's the slowest I've ever spoken in my life. Everybody thinks because I'm from Texas that I'm going to be like, you know, have that slow Texas draw. And then I come out, you know, rapid fire talking 100 miles an hour. They're like, you're not from Texas. Yeah. And I always joke about, it's an old Zig Ziglar joke, actually. He'd say, you know, I talk 90 words a minute with gusts up to 350. And I've used that my whole life as a speaker, all my speaking career. And one time I was going pretty quick in a presentation. And this lady comes up afterwards. I told that joke about 90 words a minute with gusts up to 350. She comes up and goes, listen, son, I'm a court reporter. I do this all day long. You're at 700 words a minute minimum. So anyway, have to try to make myself slow down once in a while. The phone number is 888-589-8840. Okay, now let's pick it back up. Here we go. So one other headline before I talk about it. I keep getting asked. I don't know. I've probably gotten 200 emails and calls, people asking me about the constitutionality of the Donald Trump indictment and arraignment. And so I know I talk about some of this stuff Tuesday, but I want to speak specifically to the Constitution questions in a second. One other headline first. Travis Tritt, I love this guy, country music artist. And, you know, of course, Tuesday I was going off a little bit on country music and how now it's woke and this whole drag queen show that they did at the CMT Awards, just disgusting. And some country music artists are saying, no, thank you. And Travis Tritt, of course, one of those. John Rich, who will be with us on April 22nd at our groundbreaking, also one of those. But also responding to this whole Anheuser-Busch sponsoring this man that is parading around as a little girl, not even just a woman. I mean, he literally thinks he's a little girl and has this, you know, celebrating girlhood. It's disgusting, shaking your fist at God, awful stuff, folks. And the president of the United States has paraded him around, done an interview with him. It's so evil and on so many levels. Anyway, Anheuser-Busch is now one of the sponsors of this guy who acts like he's a little girl. And so Kid Rock had a video, shooting up all of his Bud Light, cases. And Travis Tritt has now just announced that they are taking any Anheuser-Busch products off of their hospitality rider that they do in their contracts, deleting that, and not going to allow any Anheuser-Busch advertising or any of that stuff on his tour. So thumbs up to Travis Tritt. More people need to do the same. We got to stop giving money to these woke corporations that are undermining everything we believe, undermining everything that America stands for. They're destroying the country, and we're paying for it. So we've got to vote with our dollars by shifting our money to companies that don't do that. And so these country music stars are helping, I think, these few, very few and far between country music. Most of country music is woke and going along with this radical leftist agenda. Okay, switching back to the president's indictment and arraignment and the constitutionality of it. I'll try to run through this as quick as I can, and then we'll get to the phones. 888-589-8840, the phone number. Okay, when someone asks you or asks me, you know, is it constitutional what they're doing to Donald Trump? It's a weird question because, honestly, the only place the Constitution comes into this is with regard to the grand jury itself. So the Fifth Amendment guarantees you have, if you're going to be indicted, that you're indicted by a grand jury. So this is making sure you have a jury of your peers that is actually looking at whatever the prosecutor is claiming that you did, and they're the ones deciding whether or not to put you on trial, to indict you and put you on trial. Now, remember that a grand jury only hears one side. So the grand jury is only hearing from the prosecutor. Normally, a prosecutor is your stopgap. Like, the prosecutor should only go after a case where there's a good case. You know, this is clearly a political persecution that's happening here, so there's no case at all, and yet he's still going after because they want to stop Donald Trump from running for president. That's what this is all about. Well, Fifth Amendment grand jury requirement was met. So you could technically say, if somebody says this is constitutional, you could technically say, well, yeah, it's technically constitutional because a grand jury was involved. Now, don't forget, a grand jury can indict a ham sandwich. That's what I was taught in law school. Alan Dershowitz has said of this case, a grand jury can not only indict a ham sandwich, you're going to end up with a jury that can convict a ham sandwich in Manhattan. So that's what we're dealing with. That's the main initial constitutional question. Now, the next constitutional question you typically get asked about the Donald Trump thing is, okay, but can this stop him from running for president? Will this prevent Donald Trump from running for president in 2024, being indicted or getting a conviction? No, neither one. Doesn't have anything to do with running for president. There's no constitutional provision that says if you're indicted on a felony of any kind that you cannot run for president of the United States. So there's nothing about this that could prevent Donald Trump from running for president. Where people typically get that confused, and actually Dershowitz and others have said, not only can he still run for president, he can win and he can serve as president from a jail cell in Manhattan if that's what happens. If they convict him and put him in jail, he can still be president from jail. I don't think that's going to happen, but if it did, still be constitutional. What people typically get confused here is the disqualification clause where Congress could impeach someone, convict them of that impeachment, and then invoke the disqualification clause in Article 1, Section 3, where they would say now they cannot run for an office of the office of honor and trust. It's the phrase there in the Constitution. It typically, you know, means pretty much any public office. Typically a federal office is what would be expected here. Now, just going down that rabbit hole a little bit, just so you get a little bit of constitutional trivia today, even if, and this is, of course, why they impeached Donald Trump, right? So an impeachment is a congressional indictment. So an impeachment is kind of what happened here at the local level with this local grand jury in New York, but at the federal level with Congress. An impeachment is what the House of Representatives. So remember, Congress refers to both the House and the Senate. So let's take this step by step. If you're impeached that's the House of Representatives that's impeaching you. It doesn't mean you're convicted of anything. It just means that the House of Representatives, by a majority vote, is saying, we think you should go on trial for something that could potentially remove you from office. Okay? So it's always been done with somebody that's in office until the Democrat Congress last year did the second impeachment of a president that was no longer even in office. Okay? But that's a whole other issue. House of Representatives impeaches you. Okay? And then it goes over to the Senate and they have a trial. And at that trial, if they convict you, and they need two-thirds to convict you, and both times Donald Trump was acquitted. But if they convict you with two-thirds, then the Senate has the option of not only removing you from office, but disqualifying you from ever running for any other office as well. This has been a mixed bag over the years. Sometimes they do that second step, sometimes they don't. So there's been judges, for instance, that have been impeached and then convicted and removed from office and disqualified. The disqualification clause invoked, and then they never get to run for office again. Sometimes they don't do the disqualification. Alcee Hastings was a federal judge that was impeached because of taking a bribe. It was, I'm sorry to laugh, but I mean, literally had, I think it was $75,000, maybe $80,000 in cash in his freezer from the bribe. So the old expression about cold hard cash, this judge had some cold hard cash. He gets impeached, and they don't take the second step of disqualification. So Alcee Hastings decides, oh, okay, I can't be a federal judge anymore. I'll run for Congress. And he gets elected. Can you believe the good people of Florida decided that after impeachment for a bribe where the cash was in his freezer, wow, that qualifies him for Congress. So they sent him to Congress for nearly two decades. He passed away, I think, last year or 2 years ago or whatever. But anyway, that's an example of not invoking disqualification. So I've gone way down the rabbit hole here. But I think constitutional education is always good. I take every opportunity I can to teach on some of these nuances. And so just an important thing for you to know. The president, a candidate for president is not removed from being able to be a candidate or serving as president because of some local Soros-funded hack of a DA getting him indicted, which is what has happened to Donald Trump. Or even if they get a conviction. So none of that's going to change Donald Trump running for president. Congress would have to be the one to impeach, to convict, and to disqualify from running for office. And that has not happened and will not happen now that you've got a majority Republican House. Last thing on the Constitution and the president in this case in Manhattan. So people are asking about whether or not it would be constitutional for a gag order. Is it constitutional if this judge puts a gag order on President Trump? No, that would not be constitutional. That would violate his First Amendment right for freedom of speech. It would violate your First Amendment right to listen. So the Supreme Court has said before, it's not only a right of free speech, it's a right for the public to be able to hear what you have to say. So they would be violating. If this judge puts a gag order on the defendant, on President Trump in this case, absolutely would violate First Amendment freedom of speech. For him to not be able to go outside the courthouse and hold a press conference and say this judge is corrupt. I mean, think about that. That would mean that you could have a hack judge, hack DA, hack, you know, horrible two-tier justice system, which we have in America, come after you, and you can't say anything about it? You can't defend yourself in the public? That's insane. I've never supported these gag orders, even in a civil trial, where a judge puts a gag order on the plaintiff and the defendant and says they can't talk about the case outside the courtroom. That's wrong. You should absolutely be able to. Now, a gag order on the media, that's different. If you want to prevent the media from creating a circus out of a case, which is where all this stuff really stems from, then, okay, I could understand that if it's carefully applied. This kind of goes back to if you ever saw the movie The Fugitive with Harrison Ford and Tommy Lee Jones, that movie is based on a TV series, The Fugitive, based on an actual case. Sam Shepard, back in the 60s, was a doctor whose wife was murdered. He said it was a break-in and an assailant knocked out his teeth and all kinds of, you know, he's knocked out and then his wife is killed. He ends up getting convicted of the murder. It's a crazy circus of a trial, and the Supreme Court ends up saying, no, he didn't get a fair trial. And so he's that conviction is vacated, and then he has another trial. They go after him again, and he's actually acquitted the second time. So more than you wanted to know. But that happened in the 60s. You might remember the movie The Fugitive. At any rate, that type of thing, yeah, I could see a gag order in that case on the media, not on the defendant, not on if you're in a civil suit, the plaintiff. you should always have your right of free speech as an individual to talk about what's happening to you. So I don't think there's any way a gag order would be upheld if this judge decides to do that. All right, that's all. Those are the things that I've been asked anyway on the constitutionality of the Trump indictment. If you've got another question on that, you can call in with it, 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. You're very likely to stump me. If you have a question about those things that I don't know, go for it. More than welcome to hear from you. Okay, let's go to the phones. First question is from – I'm going to go to Tom because it has to do with what we were talking about earlier. And he's asking about the right to keep and bear arms. Go ahead, Tom. Go for it, man.
I believe in the right to keep and bear arms, but I think that some people should not. I've been in Walmart before, and I see people that are jittery and not stable, and I have to keep my eye on them always. I was in the military, infantry trained, and I believe I'm very well trained, but I do not carry a weapon. Today, I am a minister, and one day in church, I saw a man carrying a weapon, and I said, what am I going to do to help my people if he does something stupid? I think that's what we should all do. We should put ourselves out there so that we can help our brothers and sisters without injuring anyone else.
Hey, Tom, great call, man. Yeah, so I would say where's the line, right? Where do you draw the line on who gets to carry and who doesn't? Because I would agree, there's people out there I don't want carrying for sure, and I think mental illness is one of the things that can be. I think there's got to be due process. It can't be just an anonymous phone call, all that good stuff. Certainly one of the areas, you know. But you know, I'm not for preventing, honestly, convicted felons. I think if you serve your time, I think you come home, you ought to be able to defend yourself in your community and wherever it might be. And that's not what you were calling about. I'm just giving examples here. I would say in your example, man, if you're the pastor and you're standing up on the pulpit, you're the first one that's going to see something go down. So especially if you're in a small church and you don't have a security team. I had a pastor actually tell me this on the phone one time. He's like, man, I realized I'm going to be the first one to see something happen. I need to be carrying. I need to be prepared to stop that from happening. So, Tom, I would encourage you to get your license and carry. You know, especially if you had that training in the military already, I would encourage you to get updated training because it's a perishable skill. So that's why I train consistently and encourage everybody to do our course at least once a year or somebody's course. Go out and constantly train. But definitely would encourage you to be one of the ones that does train. So I agree with your final statement. We should be doing what we can to help and to serve and to be prepared to defend. And I encourage pastors to get trained. Have a security team in your church. Make sure you've got people that, you know, can stop the event before it happens. Train them on what to recognize. You know, that mass murder event that took place in I'm forgetting the name of the town, White Settlement, Texas, where the, you know, the trained good guy with a gun stopped the threat, but only after two people had been killed. That guy that walked into that church with the trench coat and the wig, it was so obvious he was off his rocker. He should have been stopped in the parking lot. He should have never made it into that church. And by the way, that church was an example of exactly what we're talking about here. There was a good guy with a gun that wasn't trained, that could not get his weapon out in time, didn't present well, you know, wasn't able to stop the threat, and he was killed. There was a good guy without a gun, literally serving communion, that was killed. And then there was a trained good guy with a gun from across the room. Jack Wilson was the guy's name, from across the room, probably 25 yards, presents his weapon and stops the threat, and no one else is killed. So that gives you the three, you know, don't be the untrained without a weapon guy that is either killed or your family's killed. Don't be the untrained person with a gun that is then not able to stop the threat. And sometimes gun gets taken away from you. Be the trained good guy or gal with that weapon able to stop the threat. Be a sheepdog. And everybody listening to me right now, that can be you. Get trained. Find somebody locally wherever you are and get trained, or come through our course and get trained. But don't be the fool in Proverbs 27:12 that walks blindly on and suffers the consequences. Absolutely be the wise person that foresees danger and takes precautions. Great call, Tom. Appreciate you calling in, and hope that you will start carrying at your church and continue to train. Lots more calls. We're going to come to those when we come back from the break. The phone number is 888-589-8840. You might have a question about the constitutionality of the Trump indictment, some of the things we were talking about there, or you might have a question about the constitutional right to carry that Florida just passed. Now 26 states that have passed that. Also, another good reason to support Convention of States. That just proves to you that if a convention did anything with regard to the Second Amendment, it would not be ratified by enough states, because there's 26 legislatures out there that absolutely believe in your constitutional right to carry. We'll talk about all of it when we come back. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. You're listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
Hi, I'm Kirby Anderson, president of Probe Ministries and host of the Point of View radio program. You probably noticed that many young Christians leave the church after they graduate, but they don't have to graduate from God. That's why I want to invite your children and grandchildren to attend the Probe Mind Games Camp in Texas. We prepare them for college and their entry into a world that will challenge their faith. This one-week camp includes lectures, role play, along with some great fun. It will take place June 18th to the 24th. Go to probe.org for more information.
Prior to birth, children need our help. Read A Pastor's Notes, God Calls the Church to Stand Boldly for Life by Pastor Joseph Parker.
We are called this day to stand for the innocent and speak out on their behalf.
This collection of essays by Pastor Joseph challenges us to take a public stand to protect the lives of the unborn. A Pastor's Notes is available now at resources.afa.net.
The body of Jesus Christ must speak up.
Hello, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. As many of you know, Hurricane Ian devastated southwest Florida late last year, making landfall as a Category 4 hurricane and leaving tens of thousands of families in need of help. Hurricane Ian caused over $110 billion of damage, but today we're excited to announce that 8 Days of Hope 19 will take place in Fort Myers, Florida from May 20th to the 27th, bringing much-needed relief to these families in need. We'll be focusing on roofing and drywall, mechanicals, painting, and so much more. If you love to use your gifts to serve those in need, we invite you to join us. It's free. We provide the food and lodging. Everyone is invited regardless of your skill set or your age. If you can't volunteer, we invite you to pray for this outreach. Pray that the families we serve would see God glorified as we rebuild their homes. For additional information regarding this rebuilding trip and how to get involved, please visit 8daysofhope.com. That's 8daysofhope.com.
For American Family Radio, this is Gateways to Better Education. I'm Eric Buehler. Easter is coming, and public school educators should teach their students the cultural and social impact of the death and resurrection of Jesus. For example, Martin Luther King Jr. was accused of being an extremist by local clergy after his protest in Birmingham, Alabama. In his famous Letter from a Birmingham Jail, he wrote, quote, "In that dramatic scene on Calvary's Hill, three men were crucified. We must never forget that all three were crucified for the very same crime, the crime of extremism. Two were extremists for immorality and thus fell below their environment. The other, Jesus Christ, was an extremist for love, truth, and goodness, and thereby rose above his environment." For a free copy of our public school lesson about Easter, call 888-44-PARENT. That's 888-44-PARENT.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. Phone number is 888-589-8840. I shouldn't even give that out because the phone lines are stacked right now. Let's go to the next call. This is actually another Tom from Texas. I think it's a different Tom. Tom from Texas. That's two Toms from Texas in a row. Go ahead, man.
Hey, number one, congratulations, kudos, you guys do a fabulous job. Number two, I am so happy to be in your Fredericksburg location in a couple of weeks to celebrate the opening of the Patriot Academy there. Number
awesome.
Three, I really hope that I'm able to be a better sheepdog.
Yeah. Oh, I love it, Tom. Thank you, man. I love it. So we'll see you at the groundbreaking then.
Absolutely, you shall. And four, I want to continue to support, you know, Alex de Tocqueville toured the United States, I believe, just after the French Revolution, and said the French made the mistake that we cannot make continue to make, and that is the government is not a cow to be milked. It is a dog to be fed to do our necessary activities only, but we are not to live off of it. We are supposed to be independent minds.
Amen. Amen, brother. Preach it. I love it. You're right on. You're right on. Can't wait to see you on April 22nd, and you know, so many warnings from de Tocqueville. He did. He came over in the 1830s, and he said, wow, after only 50 years, the Americans. In fact, when we say American exceptionalism, we get it from de Tocqueville. He said, we're in an exceptional position that no other people may ever experience. And he already saw what God was doing over here. And we attribute the quote. It's not in that book, Democracy in America, which was actually originally called A Republic. But anyway, we attribute that same that quote that you hear a lot about. When we cease to be good, America's great because America's good. And when we cease to be good, we'll cease to be great. We attribute that to him. I don't have it in a writing that I can point to, but that's what everybody says it came from him. At any rate, good stuff, man. Good stuff, Tom. So much that we need to be doing. Every single one of us has a voice. Every single one of us can influence what's happening out there. And I'm glad you're going to be with us in April, and look forward to seeing you on the 22nd. Okay, let's see here. Got Carmise has been waiting the longest. Carmise in Alabama. How you doing, Carmise? Thanks for calling in. What's your comment or question?
I'm doing pretty good. I just wanted to get your Michelle Bachmann. She's got a protest going against Biden trying to slide in sovereignty, our power, with the WHO.
Yes. Yes.
Have you heard about that, right?
Oh, man, yeah. Michelle's great, by the way.
Could you give me your opinion on it? What the bad thing is about it, China is running it. They are behind the WHO.
Yeah, no kidding.
Could you elaborate on that, please?
Man, I'd be glad to. Absolutely. Great question. And first of all, Michelle Bachmann is a great patriot, great American, was an incredible member of Congress. Now over at Regent School of Government, and running that over there and raising up a new generation to engage in the fight. So love her, love what she does, and she's spot on. This whole thing with what President Biden is trying to do, literally hand over our sovereignty with regard to not only our public policy decisions on healthcare and pandemics, but your individual decision. Literally going to hand over to WHO, the World Health Organization, the ability to decide when there's a pandemic and then to tell us what to do in a pandemic. Which they've already shown us what they want to do. They want to control your body. They want to make you take experimental vaccines. They want to make you wear masks. They want to make you do all of these things that inhibit your ability to live freely, that violate your bodily integrity, and that can frankly kill you and cause all kinds of damage. So it's insane that we would hand over that kind of authority to the World Health Organization. Donald Trump called this out immediately when COVID happened. He said, we're not going to fund World Health Organization. We're not going to listen to World Health Organization because they are controlled by the Chinese. And so this is just another example of either the absolute incompetence of Joe Biden or the fact that he's taken, meaning that controlling his decisions, because this makes no sense whatsoever for a president of the United States to hand over our sovereignty in this way. And the worst part about this, and I say this as America's Constitution coach, is that he's doing an end run around the treaty process required by the Constitution. This would have to be ratified by the Senate. This type of a thing is absolutely a treaty. But Republicans have done it too. So he's not the first one to do that type of thing, to try to do an end run around the Senate with what is a treaty, but they make it a quote-unquote an accord so that just the president can sign it. I think that that'll be challenged. I think that it'll be upheld by the courts as a treaty and therefore requires the Senate to approve it. Doesn't mean that they should approve it, and doesn't mean that even if they did approve it, it would be constitutional. Because while treaties do have equal standing with state law, actually overrule state law, equal standing with essentially the Constitution, it has to be done within the boundaries of the Constitution. And to give up our national sovereignty in something like this absolutely would be unconstitutional. And hopefully we have a Senate that would say no to it. Not the majority of the Senate, but enough of the Senate that would say no to it to prevent 2/3. And then hopefully a Supreme Court that would strike it down as well. Excellent, excellent call, Carmise. Thanks for calling on that. Okay, Katie's next. She's in Kansas and still in Kansas. We're not in Kansas anymore. We're in Texas. But, Katie, go ahead. What's your comment or question?
Shucks. Hey, greetings from Kansas, where it has become illegal for men to participate in women's sports now.
Thank you, legislature, like for overriding your lousy governor's veto on that.
She is lousy. I used to work for the legislature. She's not a very nice person. Anyway, my question to you is, kind coach, I have a political science degree, but it's 40 years old, and my memory's kind of fuzzy, you know. I would like to know, if the Electoral College is in the Constitution, how can some of these liberals want to get rid of it without going through the amendment process?
Yeah, this is an end run as well, Kate. Great question. And the Electoral College, we do a lot of teaching on this in our Constitution classes. Encourage everybody to go to patriotacademy.com, take Constitutional Live or Biblical Citizenship. And here's the thing. Here's what they're trying to do. So the Electoral College was a genius creation of the Founding Fathers at the Constitutional Convention. Roger Sherman was the chair of that committee. It was 11 of them. They looked at every scenario possible for how to choose your executive branch, how to choose the president. You know, they looked at doing a kind of a parliamentary system where Congress would choose the president. They looked at popular vote. They looked at states voting, you know, at that time, 13 states. So it would have just been each state with one vote, majority wins. They looked at all of these potential ways of doing it. And frankly, they kind of combined all of them because you still have popular vote within the state, if that's how the state chooses to set it up. And then you have states have a voice through the Electoral College. So you get two electoral votes for each of your senators. And then you get one for each of your House members. So it kind of combined popular vote and state vote. And then they even have Congress involved. If you don't get a majority of the Electoral College, then it gets tossed over to the Congress to decide. So they kind of combined all that. An ingenious, awesome creation, the Electoral College, has served us incredibly well throughout the history of the country. It makes sure that you don't have just the big cities deciding who elects president, which if you get rid of the Electoral College and you go to popular vote, you're basically going to give it to Los Angeles, Detroit, New York, you know, Houston. I mean, not a good idea. And we teach in the class, we talk about how the founders talked about the big cities are not the places you want this kind of decision to be made. And so the end run, Kate, the way they're getting around this is that the Constitution does say that the legislature thereof, that's the phrase, the legislature gets to decide how their electoral votes are going to be cast. And so if the legislature decides that the electoral votes will be cast for their state based on whoever wins the popular vote in the nation, technically that is constitutional. It meets the you know, requirement that the legislature is deciding, not the governor, not anybody else. I think it violates the spirit of the Constitution because the founders never imagined that a legislature would give away the right to choose, because that's essentially what they do. When they do national popular vote, that's like saying if Texas passes, Texas would be saying, well, regardless of who Texans vote for, if the rest of the nation votes for Joe Biden, then our 38 electoral votes in Texas are going to go to Joe Biden. Well, now, how do you think the people of Texas are going to respond to that? What if California says we're not going to choose, we're going to let the popular vote decide? And so if Donald Trump wins the popular vote, then the 55 electoral votes from California are going to go to Donald Trump. How do you think the people of California are going to respond after that happens? It's crazy. But that's what national popular vote does. And we're almost there, folks. This is not good. We're almost to the point of getting rid of the Electoral College. Now, all of these states that have chosen to join this national popular vote movement, their bills that they have passed, they don't kick in until there are enough states to equal 270 in the Electoral College, which would choose the president. And so once that happens, then those states, now they are part of the national popular vote movement, and their electoral votes go to whoever wins the national popular vote. So that's how they're doing it. They're getting around the Electoral College. They're decimating the Electoral College by having enough states choose national popular vote. It's really bad. It's I'm telling you, if this passes, if you get enough states to pass this, I think we're at like 210. I forget the latest number, 210 electoral votes total in states that have adopted national popular vote. Once we get there, then at that point, like I said, it's going to be Houston. It's going to be Cleveland. It's going to be all the big cities, and the rural areas will mean nothing at that point. And these big cities, and then it's going to allow for more corruption, because now you can run up the vote in California, in Los Angeles, and it affects the rest of the country. Right now, if you cheat in Fulton County in Atlanta, if you cheat there and run up the vote for president, all you win is Georgia. The most you're going to get is Georgia's electoral votes. But under a national popular vote, if you can control that inner city and you can control those votes and cheat, you can run up the national popular vote, and it'll affect the whole country at that point. So it prevents it encourages cheating, and it prevents the limitation on cheating of only whatever the electoral votes are for that particular state. It's a bad deal, and it's an absolute end run around the Constitution. Kate, great, great question. I love those kind of questions. Love talking about some of these nuances in the Constitution. If you got a question on the Constitution, always you can call in 888-589-8840. Or I also encourage you to take our Constitution classes and become a Constitution coach. So don't just take the class. Become a Constitution coach yourself. That doesn't mean you got to be an expert. Folks, I get stumped all the time with questions on the Constitution. I'm America's Constitution coach. There's a ton I do not know. And all you do is you say, when you get up and you do your class, you say, listen, I'm just a fellow sojourner. I'm a citizen just like you. I want to study more. I want to learn more. And so as a Constitution coach, all you got to do is put people in the room and hit play. Let David Barton be the expert on religious liberty. Let Kirk Cameron be the expert on the monument to the forefathers in Massachusetts. Let Barry Loudermilk as a congressman speak to a lot of the – anyway, the teaching on the videos will be the experts. And you just have to get people in the room. And then after the video's over, the magic happens because then everybody starts talking about it and they start saying, well, what can we do locally? Well, Joe, you can run for school board, or Susie, you can run for city council. We see it happen over and over and over again. When you're willing to study, when you're willing to get rid of the civic and biblical ignorance that has destroyed this country, when you're willing to replace that with civic and biblical literacy, you will see revival in your community. You're going to see a turnaround. You're going to see this stuff change. So get engaged out there, folks, and be a part of the solution. Okay, let's see here. Kevin in Illinois. Kevin in Illinois, you got the next question. Kevin, go for it, brother.
Hey, Rick, I appreciate what you do. My question is, the Democrats are going after, like, the swing states, like Wisconsin, you know, pouring lots of money into them. But California could be flipped. And is there anything, because they got Dropboxes approved, what could we do as the conservative movement to work to flip it? Because you're talking about the Electoral College.
Yeah.
If you were to flip that state, it throws a big monkey wrench into that Electoral College. And then I want to challenge you and Walker, the Charathon's coming up. Put a little trophy out to see who can call in for the most calls in an hour. Like if you had Jenna Ellis, Abraham Hamilton, and Sandy Rios for the Ellis Hour and have like you and Walker, put a little challenge out there. See how many calls we can raise in an hour for this Charathon.
I love it. I love it. That's great, man. I'm looking forward to the Charathon, and that's a good idea. I'll run that by the team. We just might do that. But, yeah, Kevin has a great point, too, on the whole California thing. I mean, if we were to flip California, there's no way the left could win the presidency. That 55 electoral votes would change it big time. But that's a tall ask. I mean, just to be blunt, I mean, if you're strategically trying to decide where to put your money and your effort as a political party, as a movement – California's tough right now, man. I mean, now, granted, if the churches have revival in California and the churches become biblical citizenship hubs, they actually teach the Bible, teach the great, you know, the Great Commission is to teach them to obey everything it commanded, not just to get them to walk the aisle. You got to teach them how to be disciples. And so if California churches do that, yeah, we could turn California around. Absolutely believe that. And there are some churches in California doing that. That's what Jack Hibbs and Rob McCoy and Mike McClure and all these folks are doing. But man, it's a tall order to turn California at this point. It's going to take, I think, a true revival. And so I think what happens is, you know, the Republican Party and groups tend to say, okay, Wisconsin, yeah, that's a good investment. We have a chance at turning Wisconsin. Wisconsin has a, you know, is a 50-50 state. California is not a 50-50 state. So it's harder to get people to go there. I go there. We invest a lot in California. We go there and do Constitution classes and trainings, and I speak in churches all over California because I also believe this is done at the county level, the local level. So there's conservative counties in California that need to stand up and defend the Constitution. You need good constitutional sheriffs in those counties, good local elected officials in those counties. So even if you live in a left-wing state, don't give up on your county or move into a county in your state. Maybe it's next door to you where you can take over that county, take over that local government and make it a safe haven. Make it a constitutional jurisdiction. Make it a place where people can live in freedom, even if the state is violating a lot of those freedoms. Lots more we can talk about on that. We're out of time, though. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks so much for listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.